Welcome to the Electric Ladies podcast, formerly known as Green Connections Radio. We are on location today at the Salesforce Net Zero Summit in Washington, D.C., in my neighborhood, with all kinds of amazing people who are doing the groundwork to make ESG work, to save the planet, to, like, how do we collect this data? What does the data tell us about the actions we need to take? All people from all different industries, really interesting groups of people. I've met people from all over the world and all over the industries. And today, now, I have the distinct privilege of interviewing Suzanne DiBianca, who is actually leading Salesforce's global sustainability efforts. And we don't normally get to reach people like you, so we're very excited.
Okay, excited to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome, you're welcome. I'm really excited to have you here because I've actually wanted to interview you because of Salesforce's role in this data collection field is so really critical. And so I'm really thrilled, and of course you're across the country, so it's really fun to be here in person and talk to you. So tell me about, as you've been doing this work, what is the biggest surprise that you've run into? The Salesforce started as sales, right? CRM. And now you're finding all these other ways to use it. And climate is such a different way to use it. Tracking climate data is really, I would think, I mean, there's obviously some similarities to tracking sales data, but how does it, what has been the biggest surprise in pivoting, expanding to tracking climate data?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Fair question. You know, for someone who's been at Salesforce for two decades, which I've had the privilege of being, very small company when we started, just sales automation. You know, we've grown so much into different product areas, service, marketing, commerce. We've grown organically. We've made some fantastic acquisitions like Tableau, which is a data insights platform, MuleSoft, which is an integration tool, which kind of connects all those systems together. You know, we've really become like a more of a platform company. So we have what we call the C360, the customer 360, so that you have all of your customer data. And, you know, who knew, Joan, that like 24 months ago, we would be in a global pandemic. And because we had this platform capability, we were able to develop tools that were doing vaccine management. And back to work, we call Safety Cloud, which is a check-in system for employees. And, you know, we really like listen to our customers and what they need. And because we're a flexible platform, you know, we can really meet them where they need to go, even in very unexpected ways. And same is true with climate data. You know, we built it originally. I ran the foundation for many years. And then I came over to look after our environmental programs and some other things. And the team, you know, was managing 2,000-row spreadsheets, which is what most groups do, gathering energy data and real estate, you know, energy bills and business travel, and encouraged them to go to the platform team in the company and see what could we build on Salesforce. And so that's how it all started. We needed a tool ourselves. We tried a couple point solutions. They didn't work as for what we needed. And my team ended up saving like 5 months of time in reporting data. And we thought we could give this to customers. And so we packaged it into a managed package. We you know, kind of gave it to customers. We're starting it about 2 years ago. And, you know, I think really part of what the pandemic did is ultimately shine a light also on climate in some really critical ways. And we saw a ton of new net zero commitments happen. And we really surged our investment in this product when we saw that happening in the world. We were a little bit out in front. We built it because we needed it. And we've been investing in really exciting ways. We have supplier modules, we have water, we have waste, we have all kinds of customers. You know, we've got manufacturing and retail and consumer goods and automotive. And, you know, the decarbonization revolution really is like impacting all of them. in different ways. And so it's been a phenomenal opportunity to like help them, A, reduce emissions, most important thing, set clear targets, absolute reductions, and then B, like offset with high quality projects what they can't reduce. So that's essentially what this product is all about. It's managing and measuring your own emissions, gathering all that energy all in one single source of truth. And then we're building a carbon marketplace. So ultimately, you'll be able to buy your carbon credits through the marketplace directly.
How are you going to price carbon? What are you going to use as a price?
Well, we're not going to price it directly. I mean, the price of carbon is so fluctuating.
It's a debate that, you know.
Yes.
It's a heavy-duty, intense debate from Wall Street to Main Street.
Yep. All over. And so we'll work, you know, with third-party experts that have a lot of expertise in the carbon markets, and they'll be able to surface their projects basically through this application so that you don't have to go through a separate channel to do that.
So, you know, you mentioned a whole bunch of different industries that each have completely different inputs, right? They have completely different, I mean, an accounting firm has different raw material, their raw material is humans. Versus, you know, the automotive sector that's getting parts from all over the world. So, how does a data tracking system work for any kind of industry? Because I've seen several tracking systems that are often geared towards a particular industry, right? But you're saying, and I've heard today at the summit, that Salesforce's system is adaptable for so many different industries. So how does that work and what suffers in that? Because sometimes when you're trying to extrapolate to a whole bunch of different industries, there's a certain level of detail isn't collected or certain level of inaccurate. I mean, not necessarily inaccurate. I mean, it's up, you're up to
well,
the-
Well, some of it is really basic. It's sort of what the SEC is up to. You know, we're really tracking what they're doing with mandatory climate disclosures.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that.
Yeah, and some of it is really standard data. It's non-financial data. We've been disclosing it on our 10K for the last 5 years. We've been big advocates for mandatory disclosures for a long time. And, you know, reporting on your own emissions is basically the same math challenge. Whatever industry you're in, you need to know your inputs and your outputs. Some are more complicated than others. Some supply chains.
As long as you want to be honest, yeah.
Yeah. Well, audited is really important. Yeah. Audited data is very, very important. And that's what the system will produce, is audited data. And it's investor grade.
So just to put a pin in that, do all of the net zero cloud reports automatically, I mean, what if you don't have an auditor? What if your records are not audited?
Well, I mean, that's up to the customer.
That's what I mean, because the customer is up to, I mean,
but it's investor grade data of which you could give to an auditor and say, can you certify this data? And we would be pleased to know that it would pass.
Okay.
It's all the critical data that you must disclose.
So they can give it to an auditor for that third-party verification.
That's
It's not that your system does it. It's that it's that level of quality.
Great. Yeah, that's right.
So you guys are collecting, you know, you're either collecting or you're facilitating all of this data. And therefore, I would guess you're getting some really good insights about what people are doing and what's working, what maybe isn't working, what different industries are doing. I mean, what are you finding in those insights? What are you finding in your analysis? I mean, even if you assume that the data is, you know, confidential and you're not, you know, seeing, you know, names are protected, so to speak, or redacted, but I'm sure you're seeing reams of data. What are you seeing?
Well, I can give you an example for what I saw in my own business, right? Because I think customers are seeing the same thing in theirs, which is, you know, for example, when we first started gathering ad nauseum our real estate footprint, including our shared workspaces, when we got the report, we all of a sudden I looked at this one office and I said, well, first of all, it was in Boulder, Colorado, of all places. The energy bills were off the roof. And I didn't even know we had an office in Boulder to begin with, so that was kind of interesting.
That's one way to find out.
And second, it was shocked. I went to college there, and it's a, you know, it's a town of nature-loving people. And so what we found out was it was an old building. It wasn't retrofitted. It was leaking a lot of air. We were a tenant, one of many. There's a lot of coal legacy in Colorado, and the grid isn't as clean as it is, for example, in California. And so, you know, we were able to work with a landlord to do some retrofits, which not only benefited us, but the other tenants in the building. And so it's that kind of insight that when it gets exposed, you can look at, you know, how do we sort of target this particular location and then bring it down?
You know, it's interesting. I interviewed a woman who was a senior VP senior VP and corporate sustainability officer, chief sustainability officer for MGM Resorts Worldwide. She had been CFO. She'd been there for 20 years or 25 years when I interviewed her. And she told me that something similar, but she got into the space because she was seeing the energy bills at some of their facilities and saying, wait a minute, this is completely kaflooey.
Yeah.
And she started drilling into it. And Jim Maron said, well, then you're just going to be chief sustainability officer on top of everything else you're doing. But one of the things she found was just by changing from regular light bulbs to LED bulbs, that not only did they reduce their carbon, their energy consumption, but people on their staff whose job was basically changing the light bulbs all the time, because by the time they got to the end of building A, they'd have to start all over again,
right,
suddenly had all this free time. They could be doing other things that were much more interesting than changing leaping light bulbs.
Yeah, and it saves money.
And it seems
you'll find a lot of CFOs on sustainability councils. There's a group we're involved in called Accounting for Sustainability, because I love it. And it's founded by the Prince of Wales, Prince Charles, and we helped them start their U.S. chapter. Anyway, I love working in this field because it's a sort of triple win, right? You can help the environment, you can save money, right? And you can, you know, improve behavior. And to your point, have more free time.
Yeah, and have more productivity. Exactly. So you've been designing these tracking systems for a while, and you've been on the ground floor of it. So what makes a good tracking system? Like, if you were going to give somebody tips objectively, not just pitching Salesforce, but if you were going to say, okay, here's five things to look for when you're looking for tracking software for your business, what would they be?
Comprehensive. I think particularly because this is going to be like financial data. So it needs to be comprehensive. It needs to be accurate, you know, foolproof accurate. It needs to be integrated to other systems. It needs to be easy to use. That's four.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think, you know, fifth, it's got to be providing you a roadmap for where to go. And so we're thinking a lot about this in this product. We have a policy module, which is tracking global climate policy. Mm-hmm. So you can see what to, you know, if you have a government relations office in, you know, Hyderabad, many tech companies do, you know, what can you get behind? So it's really focused. We have a whole education component, policy component.
Well, you can do it both sides. You can also see how your business matches up with that policy too. It's both directions, right?
Yeah.
How can you ensure you're getting accurate data though? I mean, it's, you know, to a degree, it's like any other research to, you know, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, well, I think our customers are pretty savvy. And because there's going to be mandatory disclosures, fingers crossed, that's going to be audited, you can't be sloppy.
No, you can't. I mean, I've talked about this a lot and I've done stories on this, is that it really raises the bar. And I would pose, you know, people say, well, it's only for publicly traded companies. And somebody on one of your panels earlier said that here at the summit. But it's really kind of not, because that raises the bar for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it therefore means that that's what investors of any type are. I mean, that's, I don't know if you heard me in the media panel, but I chimed in and said, you know, I think that all this exposure is causing this input to, all of this input is causing the climate reporting standards to go up. Mm-hmm. Because if an investor is looking for audited data, they're looking for audited data. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to just be from publicly traded companies, right? I could talk to you for about 7 hours, and I'm getting the high sign over here because apparently you have another thing you have to go to. But I want to ask you one question and then get some career advice for mid-career women. So how do you deal with, how do you attract people and get suppliers in developing countries? Because they don't have the power, the electricity often, it's reliable. They don't have the internet, it's reliable. They don't have the capacity to use necessarily a Salesforce, NetCloud, whatever, net zero, whatever you call it. So how, but you want to encourage, you know, especially in the S part, right? You want to encourage the use of women-owned businesses in Kenya or Zimbabwe or wherever. So how does that, how can you do that with that kind of software?
Well, at some level, you're pointing a little to our vision for the carbon marketplace, which is on the ground, people doing the work, doing the conservation work, for example, doing the nursery work. These are projects that, you know, you'll be able to invest in, certify them over time. You know, developing countries can access the cloud just like anyone else can access the cloud. And the big businesses there, you know, it's in some parts of the world, Europe, Japan, other places in Asia, I think Africa's probably coming soon, will be also mandatory disclosures on these climate efforts. And many of these developing countries, even without the mandatory disclosure component of it, have made big commitments as part of the Paris Agreement.
Yeah, but I'm talking about small baby companies that don't have the capacity or they don't have to meet that criteria.
Yeah, well, if you're talking about sort of the rickshaw coconut seller in a Nairobi market, my guess is their carbon footprint is pretty light. You know, again, they're...
But if a company wants to be in a supplier network for Salesforce clients and they have to meet certain sustainability criteria to be in that network and they can provide shoes, mm-hmm. whatever, right?
Yeah. Well, our suppliers are, like, they're all over the world. When we did our supplier exhibit, which said you have to have a science-based target, it was an organization over a certain size, you know, for one example. And many of those, they're sort of global businesses. I mean, if I'm a retailer and buying my goods from a cotton farm in Ecuador, there are things and there are calculators that you can use that estimate.
Okay, that's
emissions.
What I'm getting at. That's
yeah.
what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So before she gives me the hook and drags you out of here, I'd like to get some career advice for mid-career women. Women who have about 15 years of experience, educated, and they're ambitious, they want to make money, they want to climb the ladder, whatever, but they want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give them?
Well, it depends what they want to make a difference on. I mean, I think what I'm seeing is this incredible boom in climate tech, for example. More venture money has gone into climate tech than ever in history, in the U.S. in particular, but all over the world. And there's great companies that are doing direct air capture, that are doing clean energy, that are doing renewables, that are, you know, I'm seeing such amazing innovation, even in the conservation, satellite, certification space. You know, you can work for an amazing company like that as a marketing professional, as an HR professional, as a sales professional. So, you know, I believe in the capitalist system, and I think you could do it in a more traditional company through vehicles and like the employees leverage the work that we do at Salesforce that are maybe in different parts of the company, but they'll take either their volunteer time or their expertise, for film expertise, for example, and sort of point it towards the work that we're doing. So either, you know, stay put where you are and look for places to make impact based on your skill set and what the company is committed to. Or, you know, there's all kinds of incredible entrepreneurs out there doing amazing things in the world. And I'd find a passion area, whether it's, you know, workforce development or education or climate, and go do it.
Cool. Very cool. Well, Suzanne DiBianco of Salesforce Sustainability, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for the summit. It's fascinating. And I'm Joan Michelson. You can find us online on electricladiespodcast.com and anywhere you like to listen to podcasts. Thank you for joining us. I'll see you next time.
Thank you.